Okay, good. Okay. That only took me 10 minutes. Okay, so what we're going to do today, we're going to talk about the economics of construction. I got to minimize this size because I want to, in case other people join, I need to be able to see them joining in. Okay. But I just didn't change anything from you guys seeing, right?
No, we can see you.
Okay, still same screen, full screen. Okay, because I got two screens going here, so it's been a while since I've done Zoom from home. The class. Okay, so we're going to be talking about the economics of construction. So the purpose of this class is to kind of talk about what goes into thought process of developers, and the developers could be for public or private house, and when they're building a construction project. There are books and books and books on the economics of construction. There's all different areas. There's, about value engineering. They specialize in private buildings. They specialize in just residential. There's all these different kind of, if you want to burrow down deep into the cost, effectively, and the value of the work that you're doing. But the end of the day is to see is, will this project be economically feasible? And is this project something that you as the developer will want to undertake, and how do you undertake it? And so we'll go through some of the high-level stuff as far as some definitional terms that are in the economics of construction. And then I'm going to walk you through one residential scenario if you, in fact, were a developer, and that's the back part of it. You guys look through the slides with some of the numbers. Again, there won't be math on the test talking about how you do these numbers and the breakdowns. But the concepts is what I want you to understand. So, let's continue. All right. So, first with construction economics, there's Audrey. Let me let her in. Go. With construction economics, there's some various components. As I said, it's the study of economics decisions that you're going to make as a developer. And the developer could be a public entity. It could be a government. It could be a city. It could be a municipality. So it's the decisions economically they're going to make related to the type of construction, what's going to go into the construction, the type of project that we have up here. And then what is the project outcome? What is it supposed to be when it's finished? Is it supposed to be a public building? Is it supposed to be an open space? Is it supposed to be a residential? Is it going to be a factory? And so you start to try to look at those types of things, the outcome of what the project's going to be, and what those costs are going to be, and then the review over the life of the project and building. Now, the latter one, that last bullet up there on the review over the life of the project and building, is when you'll go out and there are very sophisticated models that you can go through that have a high level of analysis for how much will this building, especially when you're looking at like a factory or something that's making a manufacturing facility or what have you, will this building pay off itself over a period of time? As opposed to like your house, if you build a house, that's not a revenue-generating type structure. And so what's the review over the life of that building? So there's very different ways to look at the economics of when you're building something, whether it's, like I said, private, public, residential, commercial, industrial. And so that last one, over the life of the project, is something that comes in. And what we'll do for some of our clients is we will work with economic advisors, and they will go through, especially when we're building like a manufacturing facility or otherwise, and go through and do projections or forecasting of revenue generation of this facility, so that the people that are building it can look at what time in the life of the building will the building essentially pay for itself. So, and to do that, the last four bullets on here is you have to look at cost estimation. That's going to be your cost estimation for the initial construction and the overall project, which includes the land and everything else, hiring the architect or otherwise. You'll do that. A financial analysis, and the financial analysis could be short-term or could be long-term, again, ultimately depending on what type of the structure is going to be. And then you want to look at risk management. Now, risk management has two different lives as well. You have the life of risk management during the course of the project, who's going to be carrying the risks? And as we talk about drafting contracts, a lot of those are about the concept of risk shifting. You know, when the contractor's building something, the owner's paying them, so the contractor should carry all the risk or the majority of the risk. The design side, the architect will carry that risk. And then once the owner takes over, the risk will transfer back to the owner, and how those risks are going to be managed post-construction. And so those are some elements that you'll go through, and that's whether how you do your insurance or otherwise, and all those costs that will come into that. And then finally, we have contract management, and that's going to be more short-term as far as how you're going to be managing the project. But again, a very important element when you're talking to the owners as far as how the economics of this project is going to work out. So any questions on that? A couple of things that you want to do, the next thing you're going to look at is what we're talking about is a value analysis. And this comes as overall when you're doing this construction economics. And so you're going to determine by value how much money is the project going to cost. That's, you know, are you going to get your value out of it when you look at, again, over the life of the building? And then how long will the project take to complete? If you think about some of the lectures that I've given, I will put an example out that, you know, the project starts in January, but we want to get the factory up and running by the following October. And if we don't get the factory running up in October and it takes November and December, now all of a sudden we've lost revenue. So we spent money on a project. If it's delayed, it's going to cost more. And then it's not going to make you generating revenue. And so that's when you're going to look at the value analysis of when you're looking at project schedules and who you hire as a contractor, to keep those things, because time is definitely money in the overall analysis of building a project. And then sometimes you're going to have in a value analysis, you're going to start looking at which options are the best for the client. And there's a term that's out there, it's called value engineering. There's a much more in-depth detail of a breakdown of it. There's six different parts for when you do a value analysis. And if you want to take, we won't be tested on this, but if you wanted to go look up how do you do an economic value analysis, there are various different components that you'll look into when you're building a project. And sometimes it may result in you changing the way the engineering is done. Maybe instead of a specialized truss system, you use a glue lam, or there are different ways to build. Every house or every structure can be built in different ways. And can we get the best value out of the way it's constructed? But what you also want to encourage when you're talking to the owners, and this is you as the architect talking to the owners, there may be times when the contractor will come to the owner and to the architect and say, we can build this better, faster, cheaper using these methods. And those are sometimes where you're going to have to see what are the best options for the client. There are the other times where, as I've said many times during the class, your drawings aren't 100% completed because you don't need to do 100% drawings. And so there may be some wiggle room, or there may be stuff that hasn't been drawn, and the parties can sit down and say, what's the best solution for this area? How do we finish out this space in the building or what have you? And that's when you're going to look at a value analysis of what's the cost to build it one way versus another. And that's what we're talking about in the second kind of set of bullets here is the trade-off between different options. One option may have the same cost, but it takes longer to complete. That may not be a problem for you. You know, if it's going to be a residential space, you don't have to move right away. Maybe it takes longer to complete. But it may have an ultimate better value for you. Sometimes if it's less time, you may not get as many things, but you can get your factory or whatever the facility is up and running. So you want to look at trade-off options, and those are the discussions that you as an architect will often have with an owner looking at scheduling the project. And then this last part here is what is the ultimate use of the building, and what might the trade of supply between a public and private project? If you think about it, you know, like I'm in my home office here, and I have some crown molding, and I have some base molding that's nice. That's nice for a home. In building a public facility, an office building, you're not going to have those upgrades and upscales, maybe in the main boardroom, but most of the offices are just going to have a vinyl kick plate as a baseboard and there's going to be nothing else. And instead of a drywall ceiling, it may be just a grid ceiling with fluorescent lights. So when you're doing a value analysis for whether it's going to be a public or private building, or even within a public building, such as an apartment building or condo, where will the money be spent? Are they going to be spent in the units versus the lobby? Those are some of the things that will come in. But you, as the architect, will communicate with the owner and working with the builder or the developer and the builder as to what's the best value for the project. Any questions on that slide? Right. So, as I mentioned in the last slide, we were talking a little bit about different building types. And so, it's going to be, in general, we're going to have four building types and the intent and functions of those that's going to play into this economic equation, the construction economics. And so what we have here is we have the four structures. We have the intent of the first structure is called purely to function and not to earn. So that's going to be what I'm sitting here right now, my single-family home. Or on the public side, it could be a courthouse. It could be a library. Those are functional facilities. They have different public versus private functions, but they are not a revenue-generating facility. And so when an individual, like me, if I ever wanted to decide to build my own home, looks into it, then I look at the cost-benefit analysis of spending the money on it, how much I can get for this house over the life of the house when I ultimately want to sell it, and what is my value that I'm going to get for whatever fixtures and features and layout that I have. You know, it could be my dream house, and so there's not a necessarily an economic price you put on that other than you want to get the best you can for what you afford. On the public side, you know, if you have a courthouse or a library, is it just going to be utilitarian because maybe the city or municipality doesn't have the revenue, but they want to actually have these facilities for the public to use. Or are you going to make it grandiose and use it as a showpiece? Where I grew up in my hometown, there were three squares in the center of the town. In the center square, a block, was a big public park. It was beautiful. And then on the left square and the right square, they were both elevated. And on the left-hand side was the police station and the courthouse, and the right-hand side was the library. And so it was a very traditional kind of probably 20s, maybe 10 teens, back right when it was first developed, of this building civic area, the downtown, and the library, and the courthouse, and the park. And then there came a point in time where they wanted to upgrade the library, and the architecture between the courthouse and the library were very similar. And they brought in this architect that was very modern, and he kind of wrapped it with this wall, and there was all this controversy, because it was so different than everything else there. And the question is, did that bring value to the downtown area? Was the economic basis? Did it help the library? Because the old library was small and didn't have enough space, and so it functions much better than it did before, but it may not have people drawing people in as well because they may not like the architecture. So those are some things that will come in when you're looking at the construction economics of where you want to spend your money and how you spend on a property that's purely to function and not to earn. The second one, primarily a function, but it needs to make an economic sense. And so there we have a hospital, museum, and nursing homes. And so if you think about it, you know, you're going to go to a hospital. It's not deemed, the hospital isn't deemed as a revenue generator, although in the medical world, hospitals and doctors generate a lot of revenue. But its purpose, the purpose up front of a hospital is to take care of people. The purpose is not to be a revenue generator. And so that's what you look at. Same with museums. Museums will generate revenue, but they're not necessarily as their primary function to that, or a nursing home or senior living. That's not the purpose. Now, interestingly enough, I just recently put my mom into a senior living facility. She's doing fine, but we went through, not as a construction analysis, but we went through kind of an economic analysis of which states we were going to put them in, because some senior living facilities are run by public side, private side, and they're using it as a revenue generator. And what you might find is that they'll cut corners because it's all about the bottom line, because they want to generate revenue from the senior center, as opposed to one that may be run by a non-for-profit or otherwise, where they're looking more for the outlook of the people that are in there. So that's just a component of where one of these buildings where there could be two different types of owners, and that nursing home or the senior center may then flow down into the third part, the third group here, and that is it must function and it must earn through its functionality. So in this case, I have a factory of a stadium, but you could also add into that a senior living center, depending on what you're looking at. You're going to be using those because the stadium may not be, if you think about Soldier Field, it's certainly not used every day. It's only used on various weekends throughout the year. There may be concerts in the summer or otherwise, but it's not a daily function building or any stadium that's on any campus or whatever. So it has to earn its money through its functionality, what it's doing, how it makes its money, so the building can stand because it's empty most of the time. But it also must be functional. Factories the same way. You know, you need to be able to generate revenue for the facility operates, and that's going to be the full revenue generation of the company, but it also must be able to earn its way through the way that earn the revenue through what is going on within the facility. That's what the revenue generation is what's going on in the facility. So, and the last one here is that the revenue that's generated out of the building is earned by way of investment, but again, it needs to be functional to be marketable. So here we have housing like multi-unit as opposed to single family. Like a single family could, and you hope, earn by investment. You know, we bought this house 14 years ago, and as we go along in our lives, eventually we'll sell it, and we hope that it will make a revenue for us. So it'll have a revenue generation by a long-term investment. Multi-unit, the investment could be, and we're going to go through one of those on an apartment complex, is how long it takes for that those units to start generating revenue and having costs or having profitability for the owner of the apartment building. So that's one way. Office buildings and commercial buildings such as retail the same way. You know, like where my office is that you guys came over for the pizza party, that is going to, because it houses all the attorneys, that functionality of that building is going to earn revenue. The office building itself, if you are the owner of the office building, are going to earn revenue through the rent that's brought in from the tenants. And so that's what you're going to look at as a developer if you continue to own the structure. Same with commercial building. You're going to be renting out the spaces to various retail people. And so you as the owner of the commercial building or mall or what have you, that's where you're going to be generating your revenue. So those are the four types that you're going to look at. And each one will have a different economic analysis as to the costs and values you're going to cost you to spend and the value you're looking for from the different structures. Any questions on that? Okay. So, yeah, there was a question.
Oh, sorry. Just a quick question, just to clarify. So, in terms of what is different between the 3 and 4, it's like, the way I think about it, it's almost like an office building, so long as people are renting it, doesn't actually matter if people are even in there.
Correct.
As long as, but it's making money because of rental agreements, while something like a stadium, even if like, you know, a sports team or something has some kind of long-term contracts where they're not literally getting, the owner of the stadium is not literally getting, it's not literally, like, money isn't crossing hands every time, like, a game happens. But its economic engine is entirely based off of, like, hosting events or something like that.
Correct. Yeah. So what you'll do, and so like some of the work I've done with the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority, and then we've also cross-worked, we did, my previous firm, we did the renovation of Soldier Field, is we will go through on this, under item 3, like McCormick Place would fall under item 3 as well. So you have this big open space where they get conferences all the time. And so you know you're going to get certain conferences at certain periods of time, but Where the revenue starts to generate is when the people show up. They look at the 50,000 people or 60,000 people at a Soldier Field. Not only are the Bears giving, you know, the Friends of the Park or whatever, and the money that comes in from the ticket sales, but they're going to be generating revenue while the people are in there buying hot dogs and beer and merch and everything else. And you're also going to look at analysis of when we have concert people in, and there's going to be a fixed price for that concert or, you know, to rent out the facility, but then they're going to be making more money while it's functioning. And so they have to factor those two elements in. As while the space is occupied on the stadium side, that functionality will generate revenue. The factory, the same thing. If the factory is sitting there and it's not, if the line isn't working, the functionality isn't generating any revenue. But to your point, and it's exactly right, when you have an office building or you have a tenant in a multi-unit thing, they're going to be paying you month-to-month rent. And so whether they're there and working and whether they're generating revenue is irrelevant. It's the investment of, it's a two-part investment. It's an investment of both the revenue generation on a month-by-month of that functionality, so that's where it's similar to three, but the building itself over time should also increase in value as we look at the market that your house when you buy 10 years ago, 10 years later, hopefully it has its own value that it's increased. And sometimes neighborhoods go better or worse, and so that'll be a fluctuation. And you try to do, but you look at, but you're not going to look at Soldier Field and say, how much is Soldier Field worth now versus 10 years from now? But you will look at your house, you will look at your condo building and those things. So that's kind of the separation between, a second separation between three and four. Does that help?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Okay. Then you want to look at a couple of things that we've kind of touched this as far as in we're talking about the types of buildings here. Is motives. When you're a developer, what are you looking at? Is it profit? You're going to be a private developer, or is it social good? That's somebody that's going to be building something, probably a municipality or an association that's going to be doing things. So you look at the you look at your motives and what you want, and then you have to say, will this economic equation, whatever your motive is, will it still work? Is there a value? And if you think about, you read in the news where, hey, they're going to build, you know, this brand new stadium that's going to be $1 billion, and will that cost the taxpayers? You know, there's always the complaint, the rich owner, the billionaire that owns the football team that wants to build the $2.3 billion stadium, and he ends up ultimately not paying for it because there's this tax revenue increase. Is that something that the public wants to pay for? Is that about, and because we know that the owner of the facility, he's going to make money eventually when the stadium's built. And so there's when you start looking at those things where you have public and private together, is the economic equation make sense? And that's why sometimes you'll hear about that there'll be a referendum on a certain city's election to see whether the public will help in support an increase in tax. Just 4 or 5 years ago here, I live up by New Trier, and there was maybe a little bit longer, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, but we had a referendum on our voting as to whether we would support an increase of tax that would build in addition to New Trier High School. And it was a fabulous facility. It's a sports facility. It's incredible. And it passed. And so those are types of things when you, it wouldn't have been built. It's a public facility. Wouldn't have been built without the economic equation working, meaning this is not a revenue generator. This is going to be something that all the public will get, but it will help the school and make the school better and the kids that are in the school better. So that makes sense for the public to put money into, and that's the social good. If I'm a developer and I'm putting up condo buildings, how can I put them up in the right place or condos or apartments, so I can make revenue that way? And so you have to go through very different analyses of how the revenue is going to be, or you're going to generate your own money to pay for the building, and then what it's going to be of one of the four types that we talked about before. Is it private? Is it, you know, is it functionality or otherwise? And then on the other side here, the second bullet up there is if the facility loses money, the owner's not going to continue to maintain the building. The building will not operate as intended, and so the building will become, you know, derelict or decrepit. And then if it's, again, if it's a public facility, as I said, in my library in my hometown growing up, it was too small and too old. They made the decision to put an envelope around it and wrap it. And even though architecturally I think it wasn't the best solution, at least visually it wasn't the best solution, functionality it was. And so they made sure that even though the building was falling apart and not doing what it needed to do, that they did an economic analysis to make sure that it would work better. But if you don't, some things will go by the wayside, and you hear about, you know, the bad tenants in a condo, in an apartment building or what have you, because the owner's not making enough money off it, they don't want to pay attention. Key players that you're going to have in here when you're doing this is your developer. The developer, as I say here, is often the owner. But sometimes you're going to have an owner will hire a developer, or a developer will put up a condo complex and sell those individual condos to whom we come ultimately the owner of the building. So the developer could be the owner, could be the contractor, but somebody that is kind of putting together this project and doing this economic analysis to see if it's going to make sense for them financially. Also brought into that is you want to have a market analyst. And they're going to look at when, what, and where regarding the development of building the project and looking at market-related factors. So, you know, is this an up-and-coming neighborhood if you're going to be doing residential? Or is this an area that will have, if you look at it for logistics, if you're going to be building a facility? One of the things that you'll find, like when we did the Haribo Candy Factory, Haribo did a ton of research as to where was the best place in the United States to put their first facility. Chicago, because of O'Hare, because it's one of the largest airports in the world, is a great place to develop property for people that have manufacturing because it's so close to be able to ship things out all over the world. But Haribo also knew that like building right near O'Hare is much more expensive now than it used to be because there's so many other buildings that over the last 50 years has developed that area for those types of structures. So they went not too far away, over the border in Wisconsin. They were able to get some better deals for the price of land, tax breaks, and other things up there. So they looked with a market analyst and tried to determine what's the best location and the best time and the best space to build a building. And you're going to do that with any type of structure. You know, if we're going to build a new stadium for the soccer team, where's that going to go? If you're going to be, you know, that's why the whole concept of with the Bears, they bought what used to be Arlington National Raceway. Are they going to move the Bears out to the suburbs or are they going to stay downtown? All these things are coming into a market analyst that's going to look at and say, well, what's the functionality of the building? What's the revenue generation? What's the logistics of where it's going to be? And if you read anything about like the Arlington, that neighborhood probably as it sits right now might not be the best for 60,000 people coming in once a week during the fall, like as far as the roads and everything else. So that's all being looked at and assessed by the Bears when they're determining whether they're going to build a new stadium there or not. And then last you're going to have, for most people, is going to be the mortgage lender. Now, you may have certain institutions, universities often will not use loans. Large universities, they will use their endowments and whatever money, and so they won't build a project until they have it fully paid for, so they don't have to have a line of credit with a bank. But your traditional methodology for a developer is to go to a bank and get the lending for the construction, build the project, and then use that as a construction loan, and then turn it over to a regular loan, and then you ultimately finance the project, and whether it's over the life of the project or if it's a condo building as you sell the condos off, those are how you end up looking at the costs and how you finance the project. And so a mortgage lender is going to come and be a key player for when you're doing this economic analysis. Questions on that? Okay. So when you do this, and we're going to go through this, I'm going to put together a pro forma. So when you want to do this analysis, this overall cost-value analysis, you put together what's called a pro forma. Now, the pro forma that I'm going to put up and walk through the apartment building is kind of like when we talked about the office management lecture a couple weeks ago. It's super high level. It's just based on an example of a building in the middle of nowhere. But and there will be much, much more detailed analyses and many more pages than what I'm going to show you on the screen when you start working with your people and doing an economic analysis. And for that reason is one of the reasons why architects don't like to do getting into a lot of the estimations of costs of buildings and stuff, because there could be so many factors. But for purposes of this class, I want you guys just to have a kind of a simple overview of what goes into a pro forma. And a pro forma can be used not just in construction, when you run a business. So like every year for my law firm, there's a pro forma that's put out that the partners get to see, and it covers three main things. It covers your costs, your expenses, and your income that's coming in. And if you remember in our office management, we looked at costs and expenses. Those were the two columns about the costs for the salaries of the employees. That was on the cost side. The expenses were things like the rental, the insurance, the lawyers, the secretaries, so people that aren't necessarily revenue generators. And then we did an income analysis of the building and whether it's going to generate proper revenue. So that was a kind of a pro forma as well, but these are the three factors of what you're going to see. So, moving forward, these are the items you're going to find when you're doing, if you're going to be developing an apartment building, that are going to be on the cost side. So, this is something that, as far as the exam, there probably are going to be questions talking about what different types of costs. Is this a cost? Is this an expense? Is this an income? Where do those fall in? So you look here, and they'll kind of look similar if you think about it. Some of this stuff, if you think about the B101 and the little bit that we've got into the A201, you're going to recognize as elements that we've talked about. So the land acquisition, it's not a cost of the work, but it is, as I told you, is a cost of the project. So we're looking at an overall project when we're doing this apartment building, and so that's a cost. Local cost, utility, extensions, fees, and everything else. So while you're building the project, there's going to be construction costs of how much you have to have power to the contractor, gas, electric, whatever you need to do to build the building. Those are going to be costs. And then once the building's up and running, it's going to also have its own costs over the lifetime to keep the lights on and run the factory or what have you. Construction costs is a single cost you're going to look at. The overall cost in the development of a building. FF&E, which is your fixtures and your furniture, that's some of the stuff that maybe the interior side will come in. Couches, or if it's in a factory, it's going to be, are these the factory machinery you're bringing in? But then, so like when we did the Haribo infrastructure, we had two different budgets. We had a budget for the facility itself, the shell of the building, and then we had an entirely separate budget for the equipment that makes the candy, and that was broken down into the separate pieces of equipment and then ultimately the installation costs of those pieces of equipment, which are all separate from the construction budget. So that falls into like that equipment side, fixtures, furnishing, and equipment. You'll have your architect and engineering fee, your owner's rep fee, that'll be the person that's kind of the watchdog over both the architect and the contractor, legal and accounting, miscellaneous costs, marketing personnel. That all together, all those items together, are what I would consider the project cost as opposed to the cost of the work. If you remember that defined term, the cost of the work on this is going to be a couple components from this list. But this is the overall project cost you're going to look at as an owner on the cost side for a pro forma. And then, depending on if you're going to take a loan or not, you're going to have... After that, it's going to be a below-the-line cost, interest on whatever that construction loan is. And so your total cost is the project cost plus whatever your construction interest that you have to pay for. And that gets you your total cost of the project. And then if you look at it to find out what we want to find out also as an owner, what's my equity in the space? So I have my total cost, then I subtract how much I have to pay back on my mortgage, and that equals your equity. And to take this on a real simple basis, let's say I wanted to purchase $1 million home. When I bought that home, or I build a $1 million home, and I have all these costs that go in that you see there, my total cost is $1 million. but I can't pay for it 100%, so I take a loan out for $700,000, and then I use $300,000 of my own. So I have my $1 million building minus my $700,000 mortgage, which means I have a $300,000 equity in that project, in that building. And so that equity can increase, and we'll talk about it a little bit, over time, even if you don't pay down the mortgage, because the value of your building can go up. So if your total value of your building goes up, that would be the total cost, your equity can increase. And we'll talk a little about that a little bit more when we get to the later slides. But any question on cost in a project? Okay. Now, expenses. Expenses for this analysis is going to be expenses after construction, because if we go back one slide, you're going to have here, you're going to have your local cost for utilities. You're going to have your construction costs. Wait, what the heck? Sorry. So these are costs that are going to come in during the construction, but after the project is completed, now you're going to look at your expenses. So you're going to have utilities after the building's up and running, whether it's a house, whether it's a condo, whether it's a stadium. And depending on if it's a larger building, you may need some people for operations of it, especially if a public building or a large residential, you're going to have an engineer, a doorman, the people that are going to run, the janitors, you know, the people that run Soldier Field, that run the apartment complex, the office building, what have you. You're going to need repair and maintenance that's going to come along, because the building itself, over its life, will need repair and maintenance. A management office, if you're going to have rentals or other ones, people are going to be calling to say, hey, I want to rent out this space, or I want to lease it, or whatever. So you have to have a management, somebody that's going to be managing. And that management office may not be for just a single building. You may have a management company that offices a portfolio of buildings, but there's going to be an expense related to that one project. To be, other than like a single family home, residential, otherwise, you want to continue to market the space. You know, if you want to keep your apartment building full, so you have to continue to market. There'll be insurance on the property. You'll have your real estate property, your real estate taxes, and various miscellaneous. So if you have all those are going to be your operating expense. Those above the lines are going to be your operating expense. And then your mortgage retirement is that $700,000 that I talked about. Every month you're paying X dollars to pay off the mortgage. So that is also an expense. It's the value of what you're to retire that mortgage. And so you'll look at your annualized total expenses for a project or for a building once it's up and running. This is part of how you do this economic analysis, is can I afford, if I'm a single family home with my job, can I afford this annual expense to this project after I've built it, paying off my $700,000 loan and these above the line expenses, can I afford to that house? Or if I'm a developer, can I afford that office building? Can I afford that condo? Can I afford those apartments? Whatever it might be. So that's your total expense, and you'll normally run this on an annualized basis. Questions on that?
Yes, I do have a question, and that's because I do not know what's a mortgage retirement.
Okay, mortgage retirement is just, so let's say I have a $700,000 loan. So I borrowed $700,000 from the bank. The bank's going to want me to pay that off. Every month, the bank is going to charge, is going to say, you owe me X dollars, $5,000 a month. And so you have to write a check, and the way mortgages work is, even though I pay, let's say I pay $5,000, well, my mortgage doesn't go down to $995,000, a chunk of that $5,000, probably in the very beginning of it, will go to the interest that I've already agreed to, if I have a 3% or 4% interest on my mortgage. So you're paying down both interest and principal, but your $5,000 a month will stay the same over the life of the mortgage. It's a 30-year mortgage, and for 30 years, every month you're writing a check for $5,000 to get that $700,000 down to zero. That $5,000 per month, or over a year, $60,000 per year, is considered your mortgage retirement. Does that help? Does that answer your question?
Yes, for now.
Okay.
I should probably look more into it.
Yeah, so what you want to, this is what you're going to do when you're doing this economic analysis. You're going to say, how much am I going to be spending on an annual basis? And so each one of these line items, utilities, operation, repair, maintenance, each will have a monthly cost to you, a monthly expense to you, and then you multiply that times 12 to get your annual basis. Same thing with your mortgage retirement. And in this example that I gave, the mortgage retirement is $5,000 a month or $60,000 per year. So when you add those together, your expense to for this building that you've built, this project that you've built, is going to be all of the dollars above the line plus the mortgage retirement together. And that's how much money you're going to be able to have on a month-by-month or year-by-year basis in order for this building to be economically feasible. Now, if you can't pay your mortgage, but you can pay all the other things above the line, you're still going to owe the bank money. And so that project is too big, and so you didn't do a proper economic analysis, and so the project is not economically feasible. So that's what you're trying to do on this side of this piece of the pro forma. Your cost side, your expense side, to make sure that you can actually afford the project.
Got it. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. And then the last thing is your income. So you may have, if it's a single family home like I'm living in, there's no income that's there. So I had to do my economic analysis, and basically the bank does it for you. You come in and you apply for a loan, and they look at all of your revenue and your job and your history and everything else, and they say, yeah, you're enough that we can provide you the loan because you have the revenue to pay for it, but I still got to make sure I work to every day to make sure that I can bring home enough salary to pay for my mortgage and go forward. That's not an income revenue generating facility, so that would be the first one that we looked at on the types of buildings, the intent, where it has no revenue generation, but it's purely the function. But you also, as a developer, if you're going to be using that as your business, you are going to look at income. And again, the income is going to come in after construction. So for an apartment building, it's going to be your rental income. So you offset your costs and expenses with your rental income, or it could be leases. And then you may have, you know, like let's say if we're in an apartment, we have units, apartment units that are going to get, each unit is going to get rental. On the first floor, there may be a dry cleaner or a little convenience store or something. So maybe there's a lease that's going to generate revenue for those that are different in the apartments. And then maybe if you got a garage, you can charge people $150, $200 a month. And so that's going to be yet another rental revenue generation. So if you add these three types of incomes together, that'll get your gross income. And then you minus your vacancies. Again, this is looking at an apartment building. So vacancies, if you're only 95% full, you have 5% of your apartments are going to be closed or are unleased or unrented, you have to subtract that percentage to get your net income or your cash flow on both a month-by-month and a year-by-year basis. And that's why you'll look at people, and over time, as the economy changes, your rent goes up because they want to be able to afford your the expenses will go up, so your rent goes up. And so they want to make sure that they can make money off of that. So to find out this calculation here, if you want to take your net income, which is what we figured out on this page, this above-the-line rental, lease, garage, whatever your gross is, minus your vacancies, minus your total expenses, which are the expenses that we had in the page before. This is all a building that's after it's constructed and up and running. But remember, built into those expenses, your mortgage. That will result, hopefully, in a profit that you're going to be making as the building owner. This is for a revenue-generating facility. So you have your net income minus your total expenses equals your profit. And that profit will also equal your value of your equity, because the equity in your building, if your building becomes profitable, you also will have the value of the building that's sitting there. And that's why I say growth is a hidden quantity here, because year in and year out, is if you keep your building up, if you built a building for $10 million and it's now generating revenue and you're making a profit on it so you can use it as a business generation, business revenue generator, maybe in 5 years that $10 million building, just the building itself, is worth 11 or 12. And so someday, even you're making money off of the building from rent, from your total income, and then you ultimately sell the building and you make a profit on the building itself because your equity's gone up. So there's various different things that you want to look into over the life of the structure. And so, like, some developers will say, I'm going to build a condo building, and I'm going to hold on to it, or sorry, apartment building, and I'm going to keep it, and I'm going to be not just building it as an apartment building, but I'm also going to be the renter. And I'm going to rent this place out for 3 or 4 years, and then I'll sell it to someone else that does rental. That's just their business, and I will develop my next building. And so what I've done is I've made money during the first 3 or 4 years to get as a revenue generator as an apartment building, so it becomes marketable. People see that this building has value. And I spent $10 million on building it, but I'm going to sell it for $12 million, so I made $2 million profit on the construction part of it, plus any profit that I made during those 3 or 4 years that I'm renting the units out. So that's how you start looking at it as a developer in this economic equation. We had a client that that was, in fact, their very model, is they were principally developers of high-rise residential, and they did it as condos for a number of years. And then they ultimately switched over to apartments. And so same structure, same type of buildings. But what they would do is they would build these 200-300-unit buildings with 1, 2, and 3-unit apartments. They would take out a mortgage to build them, and then they would become the landlords for 3 to 5 years. And if they were successful, that building did very well, and so the building itself as a residential property was attractive to people that only did residential properties. And so they would sell the building at a significant profit and have made money during the time of renting it out to their tenants. So that's how they would do that. The last thing that's on here is what's called your return on investment, or ROI. You may have heard of ROI, or return on investment. So that's something you're going to look at when you're doing your economic equation, is how much value or return am I going to get on my investment into this project. So just as a simple example, not necessarily tied to construction, I just have what you get to understand what ROI is. So let's say you're buying stocks, and you put in $50,000 worth of investment into those stocks, and those stocks increased in value, and they ultimately, the $50,000 you invested turned out to be worth $1 million, and you could sell those stocks for $1 million 20 years down the road or 10 years down the road. And you will have had a 20 times ROI, because 50,000 times 20 gets you to $1 million. So that's a show of very basic of how you return on investment. Or I had a client that was a developer, and he likes to work with, he actually wanted me to, but ethically I wasn't going to do it, but he wanted me to invest in his project. So like, Mike, I'm building a whole bunch of apartments and townhomes, and if you want to invest $100,000, you can go ahead, and then when we start selling the townhomes and complexes, any profit we make, you won't get a percentage of that profit. And so in this case, if I had invested $100,000 and the value of the profit that we came was $1 million, I would have a 10 times return on investment. So 100,000 times 10 gets you to $1 million. So two different examples of an investment, either in a project or in the first one, like stocks, and the growth will get you what your ROI is. So any question on this calculation of what your equity and your total profit and or the ROI? Okay. So let's take this now, these kind of basics, and I'm going to show you a pro forma, and we're going to walk through this apartment building so you can kind of understand. So what we have here is a 12 to 14 story building that has 100 two-bedroom apartments, and I made this very basic because, like I said, these can become very complex. If you're one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom, you have, you know, different views and everything else. So I wanted to make this, everything is the exact same in this building. You know, if you start thinking about when you're actually looking at apartments, the top floors are going to cost more than the lower floors, and the two bedrooms are more than the, but this is just a basic straight across the board. So we have 100 two-bedroom apartments at 1,200 square feet. There's 100 parking spaces, and there's 5,000 square feet of commercial rental on the first level, so like for a dry cleaner or a small little convenience store or something like that. So what we're going to look at first is we're going to look at our costs. And if you remember, there was that whole list of costs in the first part of the pro forma that we talked about. So we have the land acquisition. And when you bought the land, it was $2.5 million to buy the land. So that's going to come out to be $25,000 per unit is the value of that land. The building's going to have a cost. So let's say you want to have the value of there's 1,200 each unit is is 1,200 square foot. There's 100 units, so the building itself is going to have 120,000 square feet of livable space. And you're going to have circulation because you've got to get to all these units. So you have your hallways and your lobbies and everything else. So for this analysis, we just added 20%. So you have another 24,000 square feet for the total structure here of 144,000 square feet. Some common areas, which we do have elevators and garage shafts and stairs that are not just your normal hallway circulation, although I do have quarters in here. That's another 10,000 square feet plus 5,000 square feet for the commercial space, the convenience store or dry cleaner or what have you. So the building is a total of the living space and the units they're going to be is the 159,000 square feet. And then their garage, each parking space is 350 square feet for the space, so you have another 35,000 square feet. And so now you know is you have two elements of your building. And how much am I going to spend per square feet on the units? Now, sometimes you'll hear of people spending $1,000 a square feet when they're going to develop a building. That's super, super high-end, like off the charts. Some of the best things like in downtown New York have these, have an apartment that's just beautiful with marble and everything else. Like I said, this is kind of in the middle. This is from the building in the middle of nowhere. So what the developer here, he's going to spend on the livable space, he's going to spend an average of $135 per square feet. And then for the parking garage, which includes, you know, you're going to have your paving, you're going to have the structure there, you're going to have the heater for the garage, whatever it is for that, that's going to be $70 a square foot. So you multiply your square feet times the value you're going to put into that square feet, and that comes up with your two numbers of $21,465, and for the condo, or for the garages, another $21,465,000, and then for the garages, $2,450,000, for a total hard cost of $23,915,000. That's a cost, hard cost, that you're going to look in, which is land acquisition and construction, to build this apartment complex, your hard costs. Now, if you remember on the first slide that we talked about a cost, it had other things that aren't considered hard costs, which we call these soft costs. And those are going to be your construction loan, your lender's fee, the architecture fee, legally, marketing, miscellaneous. So some of these are going to match up to those line items that were on that cost sheet for the pro forma, and each one of those are going to have a cost. So for this analysis, we took a loan of all of the $23,000. We didn't put any down payment on it, which the bank was very, very nice to us because it didn't require a down payment, so we took the entire value of the loan, and they then, for the construction loan, they're going to charge a 7% interest. It's being halved. What happens is they charge you 3.5%, and then it goes up to 7% interest as the project gets along and how far along they are. And you draw down on it progressively. But the interest on this $23 million loan on an annualized basis is $837,000. Lender's fee is going to be $358,000. The architecture fee for the construction costs, and this we use an analysis of 4% of the construction costs. And if you remember a couple weeks ago when we did the analysis of the project, 4% would have never made us enough money. The architect ultimately had to use a 6.5% to 7% of the construction costs. But for this one, we just did a 4%. So that we paid the architect for the designs for this building, $956,000. The lawyer's fees, $50,000, the marketing fees, and then miscellaneous. So that gets you to a total of soft costs of $2,049,500. You add that to your hard costs. So the total project cost, which is that very first sheet of the pro forma, is $25,964,500. That's, if I'm going to sit down and say, I want to do this 100 two-bedroom apartment building with 100 parking spaces and 5,000 square feet of commercial, my total project cost is almost $26 million. So you guys following along with this? Any questions on this so far? And as I said, you're not going to have to do any of this type of math. I just want you to understand what goes into the concepts. And so I might ask you a question of, like, what's a soft cost? Or is this considered a soft cost? I'm not going to ask you to start running numbers and calculating, you know, you have a building that's got this many square feet and everything else. That's not going to be part of it. But just to understand, there's a difference between hard costs and soft costs, but these are all the overall costs for the development of this apartment complex. Okay, then you're going to look at the two other, if you remember, the two other pro forma sheets that are after construction, because the page before, this is your construction cost and your project cost, not your construction cost, excuse me, your project costs. So now we start looking at the two other elements, is how much income are you going to generate, and what are you going to be your annual expenses or expenses for the project, okay? So, we have 100 units. We're going to get $1,600 a month for this. Obviously, it's not in Chicago, because if you can get a two-bedroom place for $1,600, it would be a pretty good deal. You're going to get $1,600 at 100 units in 12 months. So, on an annual money, you're going to get $1,920,000 is how much revenue you're going to generate from the apartment rent. $200 a month for parking. 100 spaces times 12 months, that's going to be another $240,000. And then you're going to be renting out to this dry cleaners, and their lease is $100,000 a year. So that gets you a total revenue generation of $2,260,000. Now, remember that first page we talked about where we were looking at costs and expenses and income, we only have rented out 95% of the capacity. So there's only 95 units rented out, not 100 units rented out. So you have to take away 5% of that value. So you take the $2,260,000 multiplied times 5%, that gets you to $113,000. So now your total income for this building on an annual basis is $2,147,000. That's your total income. Now you have your expenses. So if you remember the expense side, you had your salaries, your maintenance, your utilities, taxes, insurance, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And for the purposes of this analysis, again, there's all different models that you can use. Sometimes you're going to find that you will have the exact numbers, so you know exactly what your salaries are, you know exactly how much your utilities are, you know how exactly your maintenance are and everything else. But a common figure that you can put in here is that your expenses are going to run at least 40% of your income. So what we did is, instead of breaking this out into each and every individual cost, or as individual expense, sorry, not cost, we multiplied your whole income times 40%, and that gave you expenses of $858,800. So that's your annualized expenses for operating this building. And then you have your mortgage retirement. So mortgage retirement, actually, it looks like I did have a down payment. So the total cost was $25,964,500. That's your total cost. And we put down a 15% down payment. That's why it's only 85% of that. So my mortgage for this project is $22,069,825. At a 6% interest, so this is if you are only paying interest only, that gets you to a value of another $1,324,190 that you will be paying on an annual basis for total expenses. So this isn't going to be retiring. This, your mortgage isn't going to go down to zero. It's just going to stay the same, and you're just paying your interest only here. So your total expenses are $2,182,990. And if you can look at that very quickly, you're going to quickly find out you're losing money on this project. You have your 2.14 million dollars of $2.147 million of income versus $2.182 million of expenses. That gives you a loss, an annual loss of $35,000. So while you had a 15% equity because you put 15% down on it, in this, your 15% equity in the building, 15% of the total cost, is just under $4 million. It's $3,894,675. This is roughly 1%. The loss you're having is that your equity is losing 1% every year. So after running this building for 1 year, your equity will go down to 14%, and then it'll go down to 13%, and then 12%, and then 10%, and down to 0% ultimately, because you are losing 1% of your investment, your equity investment, every year. So does this make sense as far as costs and expenses and income of where this is not a good model for this project if you're going to be doing this economic equation? Any questions on this part?
I have a question. So after doing this analysis, what would the approach be? So the project will completely be declined, or they will change some things about it? What they would do?
Very good question. And so one of the things I have here is you say this is a poor investment. Can it be improved and still be marketable? And so that's what you'll want to do, is you're going to say, oh, what are we going to do? How do we, we're still going to have these expenses, so we're going to have to figure out a way to get your income up. Can the area, remember we had the market analyst as one of the individuals that are going to be in there. They said, oh, this market can support $1,600 a month for rent for a two-bedroom condo. So that's what you did your analysis on. But now you're looking at it and you're saying, well, this, I'm going to lose money on it, so maybe I don't want to build it. So we go back, and we now we raise the rent from $1,600 a month to $2,000 a month. So that's one way you can change the economic analysis to say, can I generate more revenue? I try to hire rent. Another way you could do it is, you go back to the hard costs. Can we cut money out of the development of the building when we're building this? And so we have a less expensive construction project. Instead of a $25 million construction project, it becomes an $18 or $19 because you cut some of the things out of the construction. So there's different ways. For this analysis, to keep it very simple, all I did was raise the apartment rent. I kept the garage the same. That was $200 a month. But I just raised from $1,600 a month to $2,000. And when you go through it, the 5% vacancy is, if you remember a couple slides back, this was $113,000 because the total income was lower. So you always, your 5% vacancy is always taken off of your subtotal of your income, whether the income is going up or down. That got to a total income in here of $2,603,000, as opposed to the previous one was like $2,147,000. So we've added roughly $450,000 of income to the project by raising the rent to $2,000 a month for all the units. Your expenses, you're going to do the same analysis. You're going to do a 40%. But in this case, it's tied to the 206, the 2,603. You're going to tie that 40% to the 2,603, not the 2,147, because that's your total income. And that's why when you do the swag of 40%, why it's better if you can get actual numbers for your salaries, your utility, your maintenance, and everything else. So if you're going to be doing it early on in a project where you're just starting to look for developing, is this going to work, because you don't have all the detail, you do this kind of 40% swag. That's how you get this expense cost, the expense here. Your mortgage retirement is going to be the same, though, because it's still the same value of your project. It's a $25,964,000, and you put in a 15% down payment. So that's still going to be the same mortgage, and it's still going to be the same interest. So your mortgage retirement stays the same. Your income goes up, your expenses go up based on a percentage, but your mortgage retirement stays the same. So your total expenses are going to go up, because your expenses are increased here, the total expenses here. So then we go to the next slide, and we run the same calculation. We have your revenue, your income of $2,603,000 minus your expenses of $2,000. $365,390. So now you have a gain. Now this building is generating revenue of $237,610 on an annual basis. So here, your equity stayed the same, 15% of your $25 million. So you still have, when the project was finished, you still had a $3.9 million equity in the space. $237,000 of the $3.9 is roughly a 6% gain, which is nice, but it's not a huge gain. And that's what I have here. It's an investment. You're going to make money on it, but you could probably make more money in the stock market, not over the last 2 weeks, but if you look at an annualized basis of the stock market over the last 25 years, it's roughly risen 10%. So as a developer, if this is the business you want to go into, you might want to think about, is this the best place for me to spend my money? I could take that $25 million and put it in the stock market and make 10% over 10 years, or I can put the $25 million in here and make only 6% over the 10 years. And is that a good investment for me? Is that the right place to put the money? However, as I said way back in the early slide, the value of the real estate is a hidden equity driver. So the question is, will the building, that $25 million building, will it increase in value? So maybe over 10 years or 5 years or whatever, and that's what, like I said, one of our clients does this, and they're very good at it. They will put an apartment up, they will have it do this, and they will make money, as we see up on the top part of the screen, but it won't necessarily be as high of a return on investment, as they could have in the stock market. But after X number of years, 3, 4, 5 years, the value of the real estate will go up, and they'll sell that $25 million project for $35 million, and they'll make $10 million on that, and then they'll have a better return on their investment than the stock market. So there's different, again, depending on your models and what you're looking at, a different analysis of where you're going to be generating your revenue. If you're going to be an apartment unit owner and only stay that and not sell it for 25 years, you're better off investing in the stock market. But if you're going to, with this analysis, you're going to get a 6% gain and then sell it in 3 to 5 years, you may get higher than the 10%. To get up this up to 10%, you'd have to go back one more time to the previous slide, and instead of 2,000, maybe it goes to 2,200, but you have to make sure that the market will support that monthly rent. So again, all these factors will go into it. That's why you're going to have market analysts when you're developing things, and you're going to have all this information on your economic equation to make sure that it's a good investment. Questions on this so far?
Yeah, I have a quick question. Kind of remembering one of the previous slides where you had talked a bit about like motivation.
Yeah.
And whether you're kind of coming at this from a purely profit-seeking standpoint, or maybe if you're part of like some kind of organization where you are kind of, it's there, you have other considerations beyond just kind of beating the stock market for return on investment. Is this kind of range for an ROI like decent from that perspective, or is it still within a kind of dicey range of like, well, still be a bit more sustainable if you could get that a little higher? 6% seems a little tight, but I don't know.
So that's a really good question. And it comes down to what is your business model? So you're going to have developers like the ones that I keep mentioning. CMK is the name of the company, really good company. Their model, well, they have they have different models for different buildings, but a model that they have employed very successfully is the one where they say, I'm going to look at the area that I'm going to buy this property, and we're going to spend the money up front, so there'll be a large cost investment on this project. The real estate may be high, the cost of the land, the cost of construction, and they'll build very, very nice units. And then they will operate as a landlord for 3 to 5 years, knowing that they're not in the business of being landlords, but their operations will help them market the building to someone so they can sell it at a significant profit. So the 6% gain here might be fine for them because they may only need, depending on how their analysis, they may need only to break even on the building over the 3 to 5 years. So long as that the value of the building is going to increase, because where they're going to generate their revenue, their overall model, is the most revenue, that they're going to generate is going to be coming out of the sale of the real estate once it creates value. So you put up an apartment building and it's 98% filled and everybody raves about it, that's going to be a building that's going to do much better when you want to sell in 3 to 5 years than a building that's only renting out at 60%. And so they have to look at those things, and that's one analysis. And so this may be a really good investment for them, depending on what their model is. For another type of developer that only is going to build the buildings, and you're going to find fewer of the first that I just talked about, a lot of developers are just going to develop it to sell directly, almost immediately, on the apartment side, to a residential management company that has a portfolio of units that they build, they operate. And so for this one, they may not even look at the revenue generation at all. They may say, I'm going to build it and I'm going to sell it as soon as it's constructed. I already have a buyer, I'm building it for someone, and I'm not even worried about that. Or the third is going to be the people that are in the residential leasing or rental market. That's what they do. But then they develop some of their own buildings. And so for this, because they're never going to sell it because their first business is rental of units, this would not be a good investment for them. They would have to figure out what they could get for higher rent or cheaper construction costs. So three different types of business models will make this one potentially good, bad, or neutral. And then when you take a look at, like, a building like Soldier Field, I don't know if any of you guys, if you've, you know, I hadn't been down for a long time, but if you look at Wrigley Field, I mean, the owners of the Cubs, not only did they completely redevelop the whole stadium over the last 10 years, but they bought a number of properties around to make that more enjoyable for many things. They have now a hotel and restaurants, and they own a number of the outside apartment buildings that people would go and do rooftops and everything else. They bought a lot of that property because they could generate more revenue from those structures, and they looked at the value in that investment, which is not this, because here we're looking at an apartment building, but they looked at how much money can we put in to develop the real estate, and they're not going to be selling that hotel or those rooftop venues. They're using those for revenue generation. So they said, how much money can we put in that over the life of X, 10 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, will we start generating enough revenue that these buildings pay for themselves and we're just making pure profit on them? So I don't know if this answers your question, but for this one, as I said, just this model we have up on the board here, depending on your business, overall business structure, this could be good, bad, or neutral. So does that help, Harry?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right, couple more slides and then we're done. So what I did for this is I added one more slide. We did this whole analysis for apartments. Let's say we did this analysis for if it was a condo. So it's the same 100-unit building. All of them are 1,200 square feet, two bedroom, two bath. So you're going to have the same costs to build this building and the same soft cost. So you're going to be having this is the same $25 million that you're going to have to build this building. But because it's not a rental unit, you're going to look at how much you can sell these units for as your income. There's going to be a few more expenses that are going to come in here because when you're selling out the units, you're going to have a real estate broker. That brokerage fee is going to cost you 6%, so that's going to be another cost that you will be incurring. Still, legal, closing on the various units. Each unit has a closing, so you have your $40,000. And then surveyor, you have to survey the different condo units. Each one has a survey, so all these things that go into when you do a closing. So now you have a $27 million cost for this condo building. So it's 100 units, two bedrooms, 1,200 square feet, all the same, the garages and everything else. and your subtotal, your cost is $27 million, but you want to make a profit. So I want to make 15% profit. That's my model, is that for every project I build, I want to make at least 15% profit. So my total investment to get that 15% would be $31 million. You know, if you walk away after you do this whole development, if you walk away with $31,641,560,000, if you have that, $641,560, if you walk away with that, you will have made $4.1 million in profit on this project. So that's your goal, is if you want to get 15% profit, is to be able to sell. And they said, I took this as the different levels of the floors, they're all the same. Whether it's if you're on the first floor or you're on the 10th floor, the price is the same. So you're roughly going to sell each condo at $316,400 per condominium. And then depending on where you're developing this building, you may 15% may be a good return on profit. It may not be. You know, if you're in a smaller market, that may be fine. If you're in a bigger yard market and you want to, and it costs a lot more money for a living, and you only can develop so many buildings, 15% may not be good. So your 15% profit that you built into here, that $4.1 million, that's something you get to choose. But you need to make sure that you can generate the whole $31 million when you sell all of the units to get that profit. So this is a very, very basic. This doesn't include like carrying the loan and all these other things that will go for you to take to sell all the units. But it's a very basic analysis. Different than the apartment, your revenue that you're generating on a condominium is the total sales versus an annualized basis of the rental over the life of the project. So any questions on that?
Could you clarify on the soft cost, same with increases? The broker, legal, and surveyor are increasing the prices or increasing the soft costs. Is that what you mean?
No. There's going to be some increases. The soft costs, there are going to be some increases because of how you build the space out. You're going to build it a little bit differently. I'm going to go back to the slide for that. Give me a second here. 2049. So on the soft costs, the increases, so I know it's the same price here, the $249. So we still have the same cost. So it's not an increase. That's just that's a mistake. I apologize for that on my slide. Because we still have the same soft cost of $2,049,500 if we go to that slide. Yeah, same soft cost. So this should be, I guess the increases, maybe what they do, the increases are here. These would be considered additional soft costs. Is that your question? Are these broker, legal, and otherwise, are those additional soft costs?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yes, they are.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions on this? And then the last thing, and I mentioned this a little bit, just a couple of simple factors you're going to come into when you're doing this analysis, and it just goes overall. Especially on a condo, once you sell the condo, you don't have to worry about ongoing costs. But any other building that you're renting out or that has a life and you remain the owner, whether it's a stadium, whether it's a factory, whether it's an apartment building, whether it's an office building, you have to care for it over the life of the time. That fits into your expenses and everything else. But you can have problems, you know, especially in the residential market here, and I have slumlords, I have, you know, apartment building where landlords don't maintain, condo boards that don't want to spend money, or sometimes you have condo boards that want to spend too much money, and that then detracts away from how many people will live in the place. So those are some things when you're looking at ownership, if overall the ownership will factor into your economic equation. You know, the people that I talk about that are in the business of being landlords for only 3 to 5 years, because after that, what's going to happen is they're going to have to start sinking in more costs for maintenance. You know, the building for the first 3 to 5 years is still pretty shiny and new. And so their job is to build it, generate revenue, get the value of the real estate to increase and then sell it before they have to start putting more money into upkeep of the building. They want to pass that expense off to the people that manage and operate businesses. So, you know, care for the building, depending on if you're going to be a full-term for the life of the building owner or you're going to be a part-time, is something you're going to factor in for your economic equation. And the cost that will come in for that. And then finally, this condominium litigation scenario that I have here, and there won't be any testing on this, I just wanted to mention. So what has happened a lot over the last 20 years or so in Illinois and other states is I'm a developer. So Mike Hanahan, LLC, and I develop a building, and I sell it, whether it's an apartment, I sell it to a residential manager, or it's condos, and I sell it. But when I develop that building, I don't use Mike Hanahan, LLC. I use 1500 West Michigan, or West Huron Avenue, and that's where the building address is, LLC. So I create a single-purpose LLC for just that building. And as soon as I finish that building, there's no revenue, there's no money in that LLC. And so what happens is, and I've been in a lot of litigation over this over the years, is I build a building, I sell it to a bunch of unit owners. The one that I worked on, this is a number of years ago, but all the air conditioners, there were the air conditioning units for each one of the condo building. There was probably 120 condos, and each air conditioning unit they were defective. They were substandard, and they had massive leaks. When the coils would condensate, they would leak and drip down into the units, and they would ruin floors, and they would ruin pipes, and there was drywall and everything else. And so the owners of each unit, they didn't do it. They didn't build it. They didn't do anything wrong. They came in and bought these brand new units and thought, hey, I should get somebody to come in and fix this. I need a new air conditioning unit, and I need to have the damage to my apartment or to my condo fixed. And so they went and sued the developer, but unfortunately the developer was a single-purpose LLC and there was no money to it because it wasn't Mike Hanahan LLC. It was 1500 West Huron LLC. The 1500 West Huron LLC had no money because it was just only for the profit. So what happens is the developers will cut corners, and then there's no money to be charged or sell to go back and chase in your litigation. So there's been some cases out there that have allowed the owners to get behind the screen, get behind that first LLC and get to Mike Hanahan LLC to go after because that has the money. So that's one thing that condo owners look into, and you as a developer want to look at how do you do your model? Are you a model where you have a single purpose LLC, but you have to make sure you protect against problems going forward? And then the other scenario I've looked at is on the other side is I've had condo boards where I represent the developer. And the condo boards, they get on their board, you know, somebody sits on the board and they may be a lawyer. And so they want to sue all the time and go after them. And so now I find myself where I'm developing units and I'm always at a risk of being sued for that because the boards think that they should get everything perfect. So that's some of the litigation that's come up over the last 20 years with LLCs and development. Again, you won't be tested on that. I just kind of wanted to throw that out for information as far as what's in the market, and as an architect, you may be asked about those types of things. And if you're working with an owner or developer, what are the risks that can happen post construction if it's a condo and they're selling it? So these are just a couple of other items. Any questions on that? That is it. So, as I said, I tried to keep this short.